So, imagine walking into a boardroom, right? You look your boss dead in the eye, and you proudly announce that you just slashed user acquisition costs down to like 50 cents a person.
You're probably expecting a massive bonus.
Right, exactly. But instead, they just fire you on the spot for actively destroying the company's value.
Which sounds completely extreme, but honestly, it happens.
It really does.
Yeah.
Because if you bring this outdated web-centric mental model to a modern mobile app treating simple clicks or just cheap downloads as a victory, that is exactly the kind of trap you are walking right into. So today, we are basically tearing up the old digital marketing playbook.
Completely throwing it out.
Yeah, our mission for you today is to completely rewire how we think about digital growth, replacing those obsolete web models with a much more precise mobile-first framework.
And to build this comprehensive deep dive, we're pulling apart a really fantastic stack of sources. We've got a 2026 course on mobile app marketing fundamentals, some highly revealing KPI benchmark reports from UX Cam and Promoto.
Those are wild, by the way.
Oh, they're eye-opening. And we also have this really fascinating case study on the travel tech giant, Ease My Trip.
Yeah, so whether you are an entrepreneur trying to scale a new app, a marketer who's just, completely drowning in attribution data, or just someone who wants to understand how the digital economy actually works behind the glass of your smartphone, we're going to unpack the mechanics that separate the massive successes from the incredibly expensive failures.
Right.
Okay, let's unpack this. We need to start at the very beginning of a user's journey. Because, well, before we can even talk about generating revenue, there's a very strict sequence of events that dictates how an app actually captures a user.
Yeah, and strict is the key word there. The mobile marketing funnel operates on these rigid causal dependencies. I mean, in the old web world, a user might, click an ad, browse a site, and buy something all in one fluid session.
Right, it's seamless.
Exactly. But in mobile, there are gates. The strict sequence runs in basically five stages. You've got awareness, install, activation, retention, and revenue. And the thing is, you cannot skip steps.
You have to go in order.
Always. You cannot have revenue without retention, and you cannot have retention without activation.
I want to zoom in on that third step, actually, activation. Because the source materials, specifically they cite Airship, they emphasize that we need to define activation very, very carefully.
Yeah. It is not what most people think it is.
Right, like it is not just someone downloading the app and opening it up.
Yeah.
It has to be a concrete, observable action that delivers the core value proposition of the product.
Exactly.
Like, say, completing a flight search or playing the first level of a mobile game or just setting up a user profile.
Yeah. And defining user open the app as an activation is probably one of the most economically disastrous mistakes a growth team can possibly make.
Really, just opening it.
Yes, because opening an app is just the completion of the install stage. It's like the user is just standing in the foyer. To actually activate, they have to, cross the threshold and experience what the app is actually built to do.
Right.
And just for context, for general apps, a healthy install to active conversion rate usually sits somewhere between 25 and 40%.
But wait, let me push back on that a second. Because if someone takes the time to go to the App Store, they download my app, they open it on their phone, isn't that a huge win? I mean, they are physically holding my product in their hands.
I mean, it is a start, but financially, it is essentially a liability until they actually do something.
Liability.
Yeah, think about the math behind acquiring that user. You could run an ad network campaign with a cost per install or CPI of just, say, 50 cents.
Which sounds great.
Right. On a dashboard, getting a user for 50 cents looks incredible. You are driving massive volume. But if your activation rate on that specific group of users is only like 2%, you are just pouring money into a leaky bucket.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Conversely, you might run a totally different campaign with the $3 CPI. It costs literally six times as much upfront.
Which would freak out most managers.
Exactly. But if it achieves a 40% activation rate, that expensive campaign is vastly superior economically. Those users are actually engaging, which means they actually have a chance to generate revenue.
Okay, that makes total sense. It's a lot like setting up a dating profile but never actually swiping on anyone.
Yes, perfect analogy.
Like you downloaded the app, you uploaded a photo, you are technically, on the market, but you aren't doing the one specific thing the app was built for. It's just a total illusion of
It's a
progress.
total illusion.
So if we shouldn't trust the raw cost of an install because of this leaky bucket problem, what metric actually tells us we aren't just burning cash?
So we have to look past the acquisition volume entirely and look at downstream user quality. And the key metric for that is ROAS, return on ad spend.
ROAS, okay.
Yeah. Let's look at the specific example provided in the course materials because it really shows how this plays out in reality. Say we have two ad campaigns. Campaign A gives you a super cheap CPI of $1.50, and it generates a 30-day ROAS of 15%. But then campaign B has a much higher CPI of $4, but a 30-day ROAS of 55%.
Okay, so breaking down that math, campaign A only recovers 15 cents for every dollar you spent acquiring those users within the first 30 days.
Right.
But campaign B recovers 55 cents on the dollar. That is nearly four times the revenue efficiency.
Exactly.
So even though campaign B looks terribly expensive at the top of the funnel, it is the undeniable winner.
Undeniable. Optimizing purely for a cheap CPI without checking the ROAS is honestly how unit economics get destroyed. Because it encourages ad networks to just find you the lowest intent users on the internet.
Like the people who click on everything but buy nothing.
Exactly. People who click anything but never actually pull out their credit card.
Okay, so if CPI is such a dangerous trap, how do massive apps actually survive in the long term? Like, is there an example in the sources of someone doing this right?
Oh, absolutely. Let's look at the Ease My Trip case study. So they are an online travel agency, an OTA, operating with over 11 million registered users.
That's massive.
Yeah, it's huge. And for them, their absolute North Star metric isn't CPI. And honestly, it isn't even just short-term ROAS. Their entire business model revolves around LTV lifetime value.
Okay, let's unpack that. Why is LTV so critical for them specifically? Like, why not just focus on the first booking?
Well, according to Startup Talkie, over 95% of Ease My Trip's revenue comes from repeat customers.
Wow, 95%.
Yeah. And they are famous for this no convenience fee model, which basically means their margins on a single flight booking are razor thin.
Oh, I see.
Right. So if they ran a low CPI campaign, they would just acquire a bunch of bargain hunting one-time searchers. The tiny margin on that single first booking wouldn't even cover the cost of the ad click.
It just produces a negative ROI right out of the gate.
Exactly. So to survive, they have to calculate the compounding value of a user over years. The equation is basically booking frequency multiplied by average booking value multiplied by their net margin. That LTV number has to be higher than the acquisition cost.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. So are we saying that optimizing for cheap installs is basically feeding your app junk food? Like, it inflates the numbers on the dashboard today, you feel full, but it provides absolutely zero nutritional value to the business.
That is exactly what it is. Empty calories.
So just to connect this back to you, the listener, think about your own projects. If your business model relies on repeat behavior or subscriptions, you must prioritize LTV, which compounds over cheap acquisition.
Definitely.
But wait, this brings up a huge contradiction. If Ease My Trip survives on lifetime value and repeat bookings, doesn't that require massive retention? Because looking at these industry benchmarks from the sources, people do not seem to use travel apps very often.
Yeah, the raw data does look alarming if you just view it without any context. I mean, the 2026 Promoto benchmarks across all app categories show an average day one retention around 26% and day 30 retention at 5.4%.
Which is already kind of low.
Right, but if you isolate just the travel apps, the numbers absolutely plummet. Day one drops to roughly 18% and day 30 is a mere 2.8%.
And it gets wilder when you look at the DAU over MAU ratio. That's daily active users divided by monthly active users.
Mm.
The UXCam source says a healthy stickiness ratio for a general app is 0.20 or higher, right? And a 0.50 is exceptional.
Right.
But a travel app, it might have a DAU over MAU of just 0.05.
Yeah.
I mean, if I saw a 0.05 ratio on my dashboard, I think my app was dying and someone needed to hit the panic button immediately.
And that's exactly where people get it wrong. A 0.05 ratio in travel is actually perfectly normal.
Really?
Yes. It all comes down to a concept called episodic booking behavior. Think about it. The average person books flights maybe 3 to 5 times a year.
True. I'm not booking a flight every Tuesday.
Exactly. They aren't opening a flight tracker every single morning while they drink their coffee. So if you apply the metrics of a daily mobile game or a social media feed to a travel app, you will just constantly trigger false alarms. You have to benchmark against your specific vertical.
So what does this all mean? We can't judge a travel app like a daily crossword puzzle or a social feed. It's more like a snow shovel.
A snow shovel. I like that.
Yeah. You definitely don't use it every day, but when it snows, you really need it. And you fully expect it to be sitting right there in the garage, ready to go.
That analogy perfectly captures the high intent nature of these users. Because while daily retention is low, travel apps have incredible conversion rates when they are actually opened.
Because they're there for a reason.
Exactly. The install-to-purchase conversion rate in the travel sector is about 2.41%. That actually beats the standard e-commerce norm, which generally sits between 1 and 2%. Users download travel apps because they already have a specific trip in mind. They are ready to buy.
Okay, so we know who we want. We want these high-intent, episodic users, and we know we have to avoid the junk food of cheap CPI. But where do we physically go to buy those ads? Because the sources point to this shocking asymmetry in the whole mobile landscape.
Yeah, we have to talk about the great divide of the mobile duopoly. Android versus iOS. The 2026 live stats from 42 Matters illustrate a very stark reality here. Globally, Android completely dominates the device market share. They hold about 68 to 72% of all active devices.
Wow. And iOS holds only, what, 28 to 32%?
Roughly, yeah.
But the wild part is the spending data. Because iOS commands 67 to 70% of total App Store consumer spending.
Let that sink in. Revenue share simply does not equal device share. And this is a fatal trap for a lot of growth teams. They look at the global market, they see that Android has roughly 70% of the phones, and they just blindly allocate 70% of their user acquisition budget to Android.
Which sounds logical on paper.
Right. But by doing that, they are severely under-indexing on the platform that actually generates two-thirds of the money.
And the ad networks know this, right?
Mm.
You can see it reflected in the cost to acquire users. Like, the global Q1 2026 averages show the iOS CPI sitting at $5.84, which is up 19% year over year. Meanwhile, Android is just $1.92.
The ad inventory on iOS is priced at a massive premium because the lifetime value of those users is demonstrably higher. However, there are strategic exceptions here, which actually brings us back to Ease My Trip.
Right, because they're based in India?
Exactly. They target the mass market in India, where Android vastly, vastly dominates the landscape. For a company in that specific environment, the strategy flips. You lead with Android volume, relying really heavily on organic App Store optimization ASO to drive free installs.
Got it.
And then you reserve that highly expensive iOS budget only for premium customer segments, or maybe international markets where the spending parity actually justifies dropping nearly $6 to acquire a single user.
If you just follow device share, it's like setting up a high-end boutique in a massive stadium parking lot just because there are more people walking around there.
Right, exactly.
When instead, you should be setting it up in the small, exclusive shopping district where people are actually carrying their wallets.
Well, you have to fish where the specific fish you want are actually biting.
Mm-hmm.
But this brings us to the operational reality. We've diagnosed the vanity metrics, we mapped out the five-stage funnel, and we've located our high-value audience. How do growth teams actually pull this off technically?
Well, the sources break the operation down into three parallel growth levers: App Store optimization, paid user acquisition, and in-app engagement like push notifications and deep links. And the big takeaway from the Newton.co analysis is that these are no longer independent silos. They multiply each other.
Yeah, let's explore how that multiplication works. Say you are running those paid ads we discussed earlier. If you improve your organic store page conversion rate, your ASO, from just 1% to 3% by, you know, testing better screenshots or writing tighter metadata,
yeah,
you effectively triple the install volume you get from the exact same ad spend.
Wow.
Yeah. If you run expensive paid UA traffic to a poorly optimized store page, you pay for the click, but the user gets confused by bad screenshots and just leaves. You lose the install.
So running paid ads without ASO is basically like paying for a massive billboard that points people to a store with a broken front door.
Exactly. It's a total waste.
But tracking all of this across different platforms seems almost impossible. Like, how do we actually know which specific ad led to which flight booking?
This is where mobile measurement partners, or MMPs, come in. Tools like AppsFlyer or Adjust. The market for these tools is exploding. Actually, Segwise projects the MMP market growing from $284 million in 2024 to $639 million by 2032.
But why are they so critical? What makes mobile attribution so much harder than web attribution?
Well, on the web, marketers use cookies. A cookie can track you from a Google search to a blog post straight to a checkout page. But mobile apps are walled gardens.
Right.
An ad click happens inside the Instagram app. Then the download happens inside Apple's App Store. Then the flight booking happens inside your travel app. Those are three totally disconnected environments that refuse to share data with each other easily, especially with modern privacy constraints.
So the MMP fixes that.
Yes. The MMP acts as the vital attribution layer that connects those dots. They prevent ad networks from claiming fake installs. They manage privacy compliance. And most importantly, they actually prove your ROAS. Without an MMP, you are just flying completely blind.
So the MMP is basically the forensic accountant of the mobile world, making sure every single dollar you spend on Instagram is tied to a real, tangible action inside your app.
Exactly. And beyond tracking, we also have to talk about removing friction for the user. One of the most powerful technical tools mentioned in our mobile action source is the deferred deep link.
Oh, yeah. How does that actually work in practice?
Okay, imagine you are scrolling through social media and you see an ad for a specific discounted flight to Bali. You click the ad. If you already have the app installed, a standard deep link just opens the app right to the Bali page.
Easy enough, Buff.
Right. But what if you don't have the app?
Oh, you get sent to the App Store.
Exactly. You get sent to the App Store, you download the app, you open it for the first time, and you are just dumped onto a generic home screen. You have to search for the Bali flight all over again. Mm. Most users will just bounce, and your activation rate plummets.
Because the app has no idea what you were looking at before you download it.
Exactly. A deferred deep link solves this completely. It holds the context of your click in memory while you go through the App Store install process.
Oh, that's clever.
Right. So when you open the app for the very first time, it routes you immediately to that specific Bali flight offer. It survives the walled garden of the App Store and saves your activation rate by completely removing the friction.
That is just a brilliant piece of engineering. It's those invisible mechanics that really make or break the unit economics.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's synthesize this journey. We started today by throwing out the old web models and the vanity metrics like raw clicks. We walked through the rigid 5-stage funnel, proving that an install is literally meaningless without a concrete activation. We explored why compounding lifetime value will always beat cheap, empty calorie CPIs, especially when you look at Ease My Trip. We contextualized retention, proving with our snow shovel analogy that episodic apps shouldn't panic over a low DAU over MAU ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we looked at the sheer financial asymmetry between iOS and Android and the tools like MMPs and deferred deep links required to navigate it all.
It is a massive paradigm shift, but there is one final critical implication hidden in these sources that growth teams really need to be thinking about.
Oh, what's that?
It's about how the entire mobile ecosystem is evolving right now. The app stores themselves, like Apple Search Ads, Google Play's organic algorithms, they are getting smarter. Mm. They are not actively using in-app retention and activation signals to rank organic search results.
Oh, really?
Yes. They don't just look at how many people download your app anymore. They look at what users do after they download it.
Wow. That changes the stakes entirely.
It really does. It raises a very dangerous question. If you continue to run cheap, low-quality acquisition campaigns that just fill your app with users who immediately churn and never activate,
right,
could you actually be training the App Store algorithms to view your app as low-quality? Like, could your pursuit of cheap vanity installs today actually destroy your organic discoverability and bury your app in the search results forever?
Man. So optimizing for the wrong metric isn't just financially inefficient in the short term. It could be a slow poison to your app's entire future.
Exactly.
That is a very sobering thought to leave on. Thank you to everyone for joining us on this comprehensive deep dive. Take these frameworks, you know, look closely at your own dashboards, and apply this mobile-first precision to your own growth strategies. We'll catch you next time.